Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. As I mentioned at the end of the college football podcast yesterday, I went to game two last night, and I am back, but not following a Dodgers win. A disappointing performance for LA on a few levels, but it is what it is for this Dodgers fan here. But we're talking football coming up. Got John Murray, director, Mr. Director, and we'll get into that, of the Superbook at the Westgate coming up. We're going to break down the upcoming NFL card. Also look back to all the head-scratching decisions by coaches, as we often do. Kai is going to weigh in as well, because our resident Giants fan certainly has some reactions, like every single Giants fan, following the Monday night theatrics with the Falcons. And then Mike Clay, fantasy football specialist, analyst, will join us with some prop bets and what's caught his eye with this week as well. Don't forget, go check out the College Football Podcast. That's under the same umbrella, Behind the Bets. Phil Steele, John Murray have some good insight there. So that's on Wednesdays, and obviously this NFL card on Thursdays. But coming up, John Murray and Mike Clay.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
I don't know if Pat Shurmur listens to the podcast, but he certainly did us a favor on Monday Night Football. We almost had to have an emergency podcast Monday night, but here we are Thursday. But quite a sequence of events to get into, Murray, because there's a shift going on in the NFL.
Yeah, that was a big cover for the house, too. I can tell you that much, Doug. We did not have a good day Sunday. There was a lot of parlays tied to the Falcons on Monday Night Football. Certainly the Giants' late touchdown and the two-point conversion saved us quite a bit of money.
That's right. So the house was on all over the Falcons, right? What was there was some line movement. It was weird. It was like 3-4-6, back to 4. What was the line movement of that game?
Yeah, well, the public or the sharper players were taking 5.5 earlier in the week. I think it actually went down from 5.5 to 4.5 while we recorded this show last Thursday. And then it got as low as 3.5 on Monday, bounced back and forth, 3.5, 4. The people that bet the Giants at the end, let's say, they needed not only that TD, but also that two-point conversion, and they got it. Barkley ran in for 2. Giants lose by 3. Big cover for the house.
Did you guys have a chance of getting seriously middled if it landed 5?
No, we actually had moved off. We were just moving with the market, and nobody got a big bet in at +5.5 here with us, but I saw that number moving with the market on last Thursday.
Okay, so what kind of ticket count, what kind of money, like how bad would it have been if it landed, you know, 6 or not, or excuse me, in this case, 11, if they didn't score the touchdown or whatever?
Well, it's not a ticket count thing so much as the way these primetime games work, the Sunday night, Monday night game, you've got so much liability that accumulates during the week. And almost all the public sides won on Sunday. Obviously, everybody was on the Patriots, the Vikings, the Chiefs. All those sides won Sunday, and it carried over a ton of parlay liability to first the Sunday night game, where Kansas City covered, and then ultimately to the Monday night game. So, yeah, it was a pretty big swing. Although I should say we saved a lot of money on Sunday night because that game went under. If that Kansas City game had gone over, it would have been a really ugly weekend, a really ugly Sunday, and we would have had even more liability on Monday Night Football.
So that was final 10 minutes, no points, and it stayed under by a point and a half?
Yeah, and people were complaining that Andy Reid didn't kick the field goal up 45-10. I mean, why would he kick the field goal up 45-10? I don't know. I think the people were reaching with that one.
So, running, yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say, running on fourth down in a blowout like that, even if it's fourth and four, is kind of become the NFL equivalent of dribbling out, right?
Yes.
Or I guess taking the key is. You know what I mean? I guess it's poor form. They run a simple running play when it's in a game that's 45-10, and they're like, all right, just come stop it because kicking a field goal is perceived as stupid.
Well, I don't know about stupid. It's just kind of running up the score, I think, is how it's viewed. I mean, I didn't expect them to kick the field goal there. I would have been very surprised if they had. That's usually what teams do in that situation when they have a big lead like that.
My big issue there, and we'll come back to the Giants in a moment, was like, why are the starters in the game? Like, why is Mahomes in the game? Like, the backups should be playing and they should be doing what college does. Like, run your plays. Like, it's not insulting if you have a backup running back, backup quarterback, and you're running normal plays and maybe do a rollout pass. Like, just like the scrubs do in college. Like, you should do that in the NFL. Who cares? Don't get all bent out of shape. Just put the backups in and run some normal plays. Don't be chucking bombs on first down, but you can get your quarterback some reps on a play-action rollout, throw the ball down 15 yards down the field, things like that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, you need to get these guys reps at some point. And I don't buy into, like, being concerned about hurting the other team's feelings. I mean, this is professional football, Doug. Who cares if you hurt the other team's feelings? If you want to get some of your backup guys some reps, you should do that.
Totally agree. Again, well said. That's exactly what I was alluding to. Like, get over yourself. Like, trying to, like, football's hard enough. Let's just, like, not overcomplicate things. Just play some football within reason. So back to Giants. Back to the Giants game. Okay. So, good for the house. The Sunday, though, was the worst Sunday of the season. Not historically awful, but the worst of the season, right?
Not historically awful because we did save some money in a few spots. The Cleveland game going under saved us some money. Cleveland only lost by 3. It looked like they were going to lose by more than that. That saved us some money. The Redskins beating the Cowboys saved us some money. But really, that Kansas City under, that was huge. There were so many parlays that closed with Chiefs and the over. Obviously, the Chiefs got there easily, but the over did not.
Yeah, when I was watching that game, I was really mad that I did not fire on the Bonanza. Annoying.
Yeah, the Bears game was the real that was certainly the game that we lost the most on in the early session. Everybody was on the Patriots. We needed the Bears. You know, I was in the back watching some of the games with Jay Cornegay. We were going over the week in his office, and the Bears get up 17-7, so we're happy. And he looks down, and then he looks up, and he saw that the Patriots scored a touchdown. He goes, "How did they score a touchdown?" I said, "They returned the kickoff for a touchdown." And we both had kind of the same reaction. When do you even see a kickoff return for a touchdown in the NFL anymore? I mean, doesn't every kickoff go for a touchback nowadays? Is that the first kickoff return for a touchdown this season in the NFL? I can't think of any.
I don't know. Didn't Tariq Hill have one?
He might have. I mean, if anybody would, it would be him. But I feel like every kickoff goes for a touchback now. It's like a given. So to actually give up, to get up by 17-7, you've got all the momentum at home, really deflating to give up that kickoff return for a score. And the Patriots kind of took over from there. But, you know, I think it's a little unfair to act like the Bears was some bad beat. I know they gave up 2 special teams touchdowns, but how many interceptions should Mitch Trubisky have thrown in that game that the Patriots dropped? That game could have been much more one-sided than it was.
Yeah. The bad beats are hard to really justify. I mean, look, you have Trubisky, you have the Patriots, like the Bears. I don't know, man. Like, it's a 4-quarter game. If you're complaining about having a lead in the second quarter and all this other
no,
stuff.
No, not like, that. The 2 special teams touchdowns. I mean, you're not going to see too many NFL games where one team scores a kickoff return for a touchdown and a blocked punt for a touchdown. I mean, that's highly unusual. But I do think that the Bears really were lucky to be as close as they were just because Trubisky had thrown so many balls that could have been intercepted. I think 2 of them actually were in the end zone where the Patriots just dropped interceptions. So that game really could have been more one-sided than it was.
Well, that's Trubisky in a nutshell, right? He's a young quarterback. He's evolving. And look, we saw on Sunday night, 2 Sunday nights ago, Belichick throw some wrinkles at Mahomes
like D linemen dropping the coverage, and that's how Mahomes threw picks. Right? He had the he had a real bad pick that almost was a return for a touchdown, or I think it set up a touchdown, and then you know, kind of like again threw some wrinkles at him, and I knew Belichick was going to do the same with Trubisky. It's just the question is, are the Bears good enough to overcome that? And then obviously the Hail Mary was really exciting, but for the most part, like the better team won.
I think so. Just to have that those two touchdowns like that is pretty unusual, but it's okay. We move on. The other game we really lost on was the Vikings Jets game. Everybody was on the Vikings, and the Vikings looked every bit of a Super Bowl team on Sunday. They handled their business against the Jets. That was a really good win for the Vikings.
Well said. Handle their business. That was exactly. It was a very workmanlike effort, and just did not mess around. Just went in there, acted like a pro team, and then took care of business.
I think the game that needs to be discussed was, well, we got to talk about the Browns game because I always want to talk about the Browns. But how about I thought Baltimore-New Orleans was the most well-played game of the NFL season to date. Both coaches very aggressive going forward on fourth down. We had a guy make a big bet on New Orleans plus 2.5 right at kickoff. It was the biggest bet we took in the NFL this week or this past week. And we thought we were going to get overtime, and then Justin Tucker missed the extra point. That's got to be the most shocking moment of the NFL season in my mind.
Truly, truly remarkable. First one ever. And Tucker, I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast. Like, we think he could be good from 65 and up on a routine basis. But that was just like one of my tee shots. I mean, that just kind of like leaked hard.
I'd be shocked if Justin Tucker missed a 50-yard field goal. And I say that in all seriousness. If he missed a 50-yard field goal, I would really be surprised. That's how good that guy is. For him to miss an extra point is just astonishing. There's no words for it.
There isn't. And, you know, you're sitting there minus 2.5, right? You're trying to stop. You get the touchdown. You're like, all right, sweet. I can cover in overtime. Hopefully no ties. You know, you're thinking OT. And then, oh, gosh.
So what a great win. I was just going to say, what a great win for New Orleans, though. Down 17-7 on the road against a really good Baltimore defense, maybe the best defense in the league. And Drew Brees was able to pull them out of the fire and get them to that win. That was a great win for the Saints.
Are they the second best team? Are they the third best team in the NFL?
I think that they are. I really think that they're right there with these other top teams. Probably the Rams are better than them at this point. The Rams are higher power rated at this point, but New Orleans is going to be very, very dangerous in the playoffs, man. They're a very good team. That was a great win.
I guess I skipped a step. So we know the Rams are the best, and I personally put the Chiefs there because I was that impressed with Foxborough, but I guess you can if they lost to New England. And I guess there's a clear-cut one, and that's the Rams. But, like, who is the second-best team, I guess? And the Saints are 5-1. You can make a case they are.
Yeah, you got the Saints, you got the Patriots, you got the Chiefs. I mean, there's a pretty clear-cut top four right now in the NFL. But I would agree with you. Those other three teams are all a notch below the L.A. Rams at the moment.
Well, we have a rematch here with the Vikings and Saints. I know the Vikings have two losses, an embarrassing one to Buffalo. But I would put them in that tier as well. Their best version of football certainly belongs in that discussion. They've just been inconsistent, I guess.
Yeah, and if they play like they did on Sunday against the Jets, then certainly they're right there with New Orleans and Kansas City and those other teams we just mentioned.
Right, because the Saints could easily have a second loss, too, with that Browns game. But anyways, so let's go back to the Giants game. I alluded to it off the top, and with all the game theory, Kai, we got a little peanut gallery comments and vent rant from you. It was good to get our resident Giants fan complaining yesterday at the end of the college pod. He was really eager to hear this discussion today.
Yeah.
You slept on it. You got a lot off your chest yesterday. You slept on it now. How do you feel about everything? Still upset?
Oh, well, naturally I'm still upset, but I just really, you know, I mean, you did a good job of kind of just briefly talking about it yesterday, but I just don't understand in a game of, you know, I know the game has evolved and changed. It got smarter. You listen more to the analytics and the numbers and everything like that. But Shermer, I just don't understand that call when I believe it was Booger who said, you know, the best thing you can do for your team and for your defense is give them the confidence of knowing that this game is not over. And when we lost that 2-point conversion, it was like it was totally deflated. So I just still don't understand that going for two in that situation.
Yeah, but, okay. But they were still only down by eight, though, Kai. I mean, right after they didn't get the two, they were still only down by eight, so it was still a one-possession game.
I do understand that, but I feel like, you know, going for the two when you're down by eight, you know, when it's all on the line and then we don't convert that, I feel a lot better about not converting that when it's all on the line than not converting it the first time when it's like, you know, we basically shot ourselves in the foot, in my opinion.
So, Kai, the fascinating thing all this is the one side of people who are like pro analytics or whatever, they actually bring up factual math that explains it gives you a better chance to win. So they bring up like an actual math formula that explains and illustrates this is why you should do it. And the other side, the other group, doesn't bring up anything concrete. They're like, well, I just don't like it. Like, feeling, it's all feel like. So, Kai, you really have, like, not that you, but there's a lot of, whether it be Giants fans or just football fans, who really don't give a concrete like counterpoint.
Right. And I mean, if we convert on that 2-point conversion, this conversation out the window, everybody's happy. They're calling Shermer a genius. I do understand that
no, they're not because they still lose. Like, that's the thing. It didn't come down to that play because the Falcons kicked a field goal. So it's a moot point in that regard. But here's the thing. And it has nothing to do with Pat Shermer. Like, the Eagles did it a couple weeks ago against the Vikings. And I actually thought when they did it against the Eagles, it was kind of reckless. When they did it against the Vikings, it was reckless. And I actually think there's, like, bigger issues with Shermer to discuss in this game. And, Murray, that's what I was joking about at the top of the podcast, is, like, I think he listens. So, first things first, the most egregious thing that happened by Pat Shermer in the game was at the end of the first half, when they were running hurry-up offense inside of 2 minutes. First and foremost, that was the problem, because they got inside the red zone, and we talked about this a few weeks ago when the Steelers and Bucks played on Monday night, and I said the Bucks scored too quickly, and then the Steelers went back down and scored a touchdown when they kicked it from the one. So my point is you can't operate in a vacuum when you're on offense, when you're running plays, and you're deciding between timeouts and all that fun stuff. And the Giants, at the end of the second quarter, kicked a field goal that allowed the Falcons to answer, and they were running like hurry-up.
Right, and you can't that's true.
So they got a first down, I believe, inside the red zone, and they kicked a field goal with 50 seconds to go, 5-0. But it should have been like 10 seconds. Because they hurry up and ran plays. So what happened is that allowed the Falcons to answer, and the Falcons almost scored a touchdown. Matt Ryan hit Hooper in the shoulder. It was a little behind him, but they settled for a field goal. So the Giants get a first down inside the red zone inside of 2 minutes, and they end up net 0 points because they scored a field goal too quickly, which should never happen, and then the Falcons were able to answer. So they lost that competitive advantage. They had the ball at the end of the first half.
Yeah, your only job as a play caller, your only job is not to score. Your other job is to also run out the clock so the other team doesn't have enough time to score. And you've got to think like that when you're a play caller in that kind of a situation. You're also trying to run down the clock so Matt Ryan doesn't have any time to come back at you.
Very
true. They had all their timeouts, I believe, too. So it's like it's insane.
I agree. And Pat Shermer there's a lot of coaches in the NFL that look like they're in over their heads right now, and hopefully we can talk about the Browns game as well. But Pat Shermer's on that list. He doesn't look – I don't know what the Giants are doing at all, frankly. I don't understand what their plan is whatsoever. They're drafting running backs with the second overall pick when they don't have a quarterback. They give Odell Beckham Jr. this huge contract extension. The Giants are a mess, man.
We got rid of Snacks Harrison and Eli Apple. I know this isn't a Giants show, or you know, but I don't know, man.
That's fine.
I don't get that either. I don't get getting rid of Snacks and Eli Apple.
Okay, so just real quickly, they called a timeout with 1:03 to go on the 9-yard line. Like, why?
I don't know. I don't know what Pat Shurmur is doing, but I did like his decision to go for two down 14.
Okay,
so I guess every now and then these guys get something right, but he I don't think much of Pat Shurmur.
Right. So the analytics is, and I know people have complained and don't want to read an article. I'm going to try to explain it articulately, but you got to just read the article. Basically, conversion percentage on a two-pointer is 50%. Okay.
Yeah.
On a PAT, with the now PAT's back up 94%, used to be like 99, I believe. So you're working backwards, not just from time. Like the emotional people who talk about this and all this are talking about tying the game. The object is a win. So you have to factor in a 50% success rate of winning in overtime as well. And that's what's combined probability, and that's what it does. It's like a decision tree. And if you go for two, so they're saying if you're down 14 and you go for two both times with a 50% success rate, you'll get one of the two-point conversions. That's the thought process, and there's no more scores. And obviously that late in the game with the Giants, you're going to have no more scores. So
right.
The thing is, if you're going to get one of those two-point conversions because of the 50% success rate and their two options, if you get it the first time, then you're down six, and then you can kick the extra point for the win. And that's
the key thing right there, Doug. What you said about it's not just about tying the game; it's about taking the lead in the game. And that's what that's what going for two there gives you the opportunity to do. And if you fail, well, you still can just tie the game anyway with a two-point conversion. You've got to think you're going to convert one of your two-point conversion attempts, right? The math says that you will.
Right, and to Kai's point, like, there is momentum. I do believe, like, I played sports. I understand the momentum thing, and I understand the team being, you know, it's unconventional. I think it's the equivalent of when the NBA and college basketball started shifting when the teams had a three-point lead would foul with the under 7 seconds to go to prevent the team from shooting a three. It's unconventional.
Yeah.
But it makes more sense. And in due time, I don't know if it's going to be 2, 5, 10 years, in due time, that two-point conversion attempt will be commonplace in the NFL.
Looking around the landscape at the NFL head coaches, I think it's going to be more like 10 years instead of the next couple of years. I don't think most of these guys know what they're doing right now, man. I mean, not most of them, but a lot of them. There's a lot of coaches out there. I don't think they know what they're doing.
It was incredible. I think clock mismanagement at the end of the first half, that was the big disservice he did to his team, not the two-point conversion. I will say this. I got into a discussion with a buddy who knows this stuff very well about, you know, sometimes you're down two scores, which is one of which is a field goal. You kick it right away, like 40 seconds to go on the 20-yard line or 25-yard line, and give yourself – then you know how much time you have left to get the touchdown. I actually – with, I think, a two-point conversion's involved, so like in this case 11 – I actually think you should try to get the touchdown first in case the two-point conversion is unsuccessful. Then you know you need another touchdown instead of a field goal. And I actually think you bend the rules a little bit to go for that touchdown. Now, I don't think you run QB sneaks on the goal line. Would that take a bunch of time? I think you do spike it, like Jason Witten was saying on the broadcast. But I'm okay going for the touchdown inside the 10 because then you can kick a bomb field goal instead of throwing a Hail Mary.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, if you get down that close, it's not a bad idea to just go for the touchdown. I think one final point on the Giants, though, that two-point conversion attempt should have worked, Kai. Odell Beckham Jr. should have caught that pass.
That's true. That's very true. I mean,
so you
Eli
can't blame it all on the coaches.
Yeah. Eli put it in a place where he shouldn't have been able to grab it. He should have been able to squeeze that and hold on to it. You know.
And I loved to switch over to the London game, the early game Sunday morning. I loved Tennessee's decision to go for two at the end of that game, try to steal that win against the Chargers. Anthony Lynn did everything wrong in that game. He punted on fourth and short, up by a touchdown. Tennessee, within like two plays, was already past where he punted from. And then when Tennessee got down inside the 10-yard line, Anthony Lynn wasn't calling timeout. He wasn't calling timeouts to save some time for Phillip Rivers and the offense to get the ball back and try to score after Tennessee's touchdown. It looked like Phillip Rivers finally went over to him and was like, hey, coach, we should probably call timeout here. And they did. Luckily for Anthony Lynn and the Chargers, they escaped, but he did everything wrong. And I appreciated Mike Vrabel going for two there. I didn't like the play call. on the second conversion attempt from the 1 yard line, but I did like the move to go for two.
I mean, you hit everything on the head. So let's go to the play call since you ended there. This goes back to fourth down attempts. What does the other team want you to do? What do you think the Chargers want you to do when you have
probably
and Marcus
throw a low percentage pass? Yeah.
You're on the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
You're on the 1 yard line.
I'm hoping for a very low percentage pass play. Yes, that's what I'm hoping for. No, the play call was terrible. I mean, we all know that. There's no question about that.
With a quarterback who's not really that good of a passer.
No, I know. I admired them for going for two. I was rooting for them to get it, and I didn't think much of the play. Have I made that clear enough? Just not a good play call. But I admire the aggressiveness of Vrabel. It worked for him in the Philadelphia game earlier in the year. It did not work for him in London on Sunday, but I think he's on the right track.
And going back to Anthony Lynn, it wasn't even a decision to punt on fourth down. Before it, they basically did the opposite of the Rams. So the Rams go for the jugular, right? They have a lead. They protect it with the pass. Simple concept when you excel at passing. And you can even do conservative to Gurley. Like, the Chargers just ran the ball straight in the line a bunch of times and punted. Like, literally, you have Philip Rivers.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
It's insane.
I know it is. And then they punted. I mean, I know what you're saying. You're definitely right. But they punted on, like, fourth and three, because I don't remember exactly. But they were definitely on the other side of the 50. It was fourth and short. And they punted. And Tennessee, within two or three plays, had already gotten the ball back to where the Chargers had punted from. And if you're Tennessee, your only hope there is that the Chargers will be dumb enough to run the ball into the line three times and then punt. That's really your only chance of winning the game. And that's exactly what happened.
The Saints last year in a playoff game on the plus side of the 50 did this with the Panthers. Now, actually, they were unsuccessful.
Yeah, I remember that.
They lined up to do it, I think, and they took a penalty and then punted. But, like, the Saints were trying to do this to ice the game. You put the ball in the hands of your best player, which is Drew Brees. In this case, it's Philip Rivers. Like, you can't just run power eyes straight in the line. It's such an archaic way of thinking. I'd be furious if I was the owner of the Chargers.
It's just unbelievable that still we have so many coaches in the league that can't figure this stuff out. Everybody's talking about it now. It's very out in the open. And some of these head coaches, they just continue to have blinders on, Doug. And Anthony Lynn, let's just say he's very fortunate he's got such a loaded roster in L.A. because I don't think much of the job that he's doing with that team, but that team has a lot of talent. They're very quietly now 5-2.
Exactly, and their two losses are to the Chiefs and the other
Rams.
Team, Rams. So they're certainly respectable. It's funny we talked about those two games. I was one of those end-of-the-game nonsense. Helped me in the bonanza. The other one hurt me. We'll get into that later in the Baby Bankroll bonanza. But I know you wanted to talk about the Browns game because it was more theatrics.
I always want to talk about the Browns games are so much fun, man. I mean, they're just endlessly entertaining to me. Overtime was awesome because both coaches were like batting the game back and forth to each other, and both quarterbacks took sacks that pushed their team out of field goal range. Cleveland had a long punt return, Jabril Peppers, and then he fumbled the ball. And then we were all making fun of Tampa Bay for attempting that 59-yard field goal. We thought they were crazy for that, and then the kid made it. So that game was just wild. You know, I think Ed had the best comment of the day, though. He said, right when the game went to overtime, he said to me he thinks that the Browns play so many overtime games that they should just explain the overtime rules to the other team. Like, you don't even need the refs to come out there. Just the Browns captains should just be like, okay, guys, we're going to get the ball first. If we score a touchdown, the game's over. If we don't, you guys get a chance to match our score with your possession. And then other players are like, oh, okay, cool, that sounds good. I mean, the Browns, they do it so often, they can pretty much explain everything to everybody at this point.
Do you think the players can explain it to Hugh Jackson?
I don't know if anybody could explain it to Hugh Jackson, but I trust the players to explain it amongst themselves. I love Hugh Jackson, too. Hugh Jackson comes out after the game, throws the offensive coordinator under the bus, says he's going to get more involved with the offense. I can't believe that guy still has a job. He went 0-16 last year, and he's botching this season on top of it. It's amazing that guy still has a job.
So, you know, early in the season we talked about it, and I defended the 0-16 coaching because I thought it was more of a personnel issue. But you've got me off that off that side because, like I said, the two fingers up when they got their first win in OT, he thought yeah. 2 seconds. I yeah. think Baker Mayfield clearly better than Taylor, and it's oh, just
yeah. so they have players now, Doug. The Browns have the horses. They're not a Super Bowl team, but they've got enough talent to be very competitive week in and week out. They've got a quarterback now. They've got playmakers on offense. They've got stud players on defense. There's no reason why they should be this bad. They have the players now, and it's got to be on Hugh Jackson. It just has to be.
I agree. But so there were some. So the Chargers got jobbed in Oakland, right? They had the game won, then it was like a review of a spot that really made no sense. Excuse me, yeah, the Browns, excuse me. And then so they really should have had that win. This one,
that's true.
Baker Mayfield scrambling got targeted, got popped in his ear hole by a launching helmet, and there was no call, and that was the fumble.
Yeah, that was confusing because, like, obviously the league is going to great lengths to take care of the quarterbacks, you know, whether you agree with that or not. We all know that's happening. Why didn't Baker Mayfield get that call? That seemed like one that definitely deserved a flag. And think about some of the roughing the passer penalties that have been called on Clay Matthews this year. And Baker Mayfield doesn't get a call there. I don't know. There's no consistency with the way these refs call these things.
No consistency at all. And it's just figures that the Browns are the ones getting the short end of the stick there. So I think we've covered a yeah. lot of the game and a lot of the coaching decisions. I know Kai was really excited as we love to put down the game theory of these situations. But my first comment on SportsCenter when I discussed it following the weekend was, congratulations, America. We did it. And then it was the worst Sunday of the season for the sports books.
Yeah, no one ever feels sorry for us, Doug. I don't know why not. They never feel sorry for the little engine that could that is the Nevada sportsbook industry. But we'll be okay. We had a decent day Saturday, and I think we'll be okay.
All right, as we turn the page to this week, I will say I'm glad order was restored. We talked about it on the podcast. I gave out Indianapolis -7 on SportsCenter because I was like, all right, let's pump the brakes on these backup quarterbacks playing. Like, I don't know where Derek Anderson's coming from, but he needs more than 7 points, to be fair, in this case, considering he was out of a job. And then there was also the Brock Osweiler thing, all those lucky bounces in that overtime win over the Bears. Like, I think there was a graphic of the ball traveled on this. Like, the ball wasn't traveling downfield. He was throwing hitch passes or bubble screens, and then the receivers were doing all the work. And then that third and long he converted in overtime against Chicago was like super lucky. It should have been almost picked. So order was restored with Osweiler last week.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. And the Lions, very quietly, they've covered 5 games in a row now since that, you know, that debacle they had on opening Monday Night Football against the New York Jets. Detroit quietly is playing pretty well right now, and they look like a team. That entire NFC North has playoff aspirations at this point in the season. That's a really tough division, and the Lions are playing very well.
Yeah, they are. So they get the W, Miami at Houston tonight, and looks like there's sevens and 7.5s here with the home team.
Yeah, you know, we'd open it 7.5, and we had some wise guys actually took Miami +7.5. This was on Sunday night. We went down to Houston -7, -120. Made one of our house players lay 48,000 to win 40,000 on that. And we went back up to 7.5. And since then, we've just seen money come in on both sides. Right now, we need Miami. Just a lot of money line parlays. A lot of teasers are going to include the Houston Texans. Houston's on a 4-game winning streak of their own right now after the 0-3 start. They've saved Bill O'Brien's job. And they had a great win on Sunday against Jacksonville. Really, that was their first impressive win of the year.
I know, remarkable escapes with wins, and then they get that one. That was impressive. I will say this. I don't get how Deshaun Watson is not healthy enough to get on a flight, but he's healthy enough to take a and then play football in the NFL.
I didn't understand that either. They said that he can't fly because of what's wrong with him again? I don't even remember that part. Something to do with a head injury of some kind?
No, I think it's ribs. I think it's like...
Oh, it's ribs. It's his lungs. You're right. I think it's his lungs. Yeah, and so he can't fly, but he can play professional football. I'm no doctor, Doug, but that doesn't make much sense to me. Isn't professional football kind of dangerous?
Yeah, and like take hits in that lung area for guys on the Jaguars front line. Like, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Bruised lung and beat up ribs. That's what I'm seeing in the USA
Bruised
Today
lung, article. Yeah. Right. So that sounds bad, but he's still out there.
So question. So you guys don't have 7.5. Excuse me, you have 7.5. MGM has 7 -130. It reminds me of a tweet I got a couple weeks ago that I wanted to ask you. It was a question from one of our loyal listeners, and I don't have it in front of me, but essentially saying, you know, you don't have to speak to MGM, just speak in general, more so maybe in college, actually. It's probably a better question. But, like, do you guys always try to be on a half point because you're going to win so much money on juice and try
we
to get off the
put? We don't like dealing stuff at -130. For one thing, it's hard for casual sports bettors to even understand what that means. I think it deflects some action. Maybe is you don't get because your line's kind of confusing. Like when you have like +7, -140, we don't like doing that sort of thing. I know what other books are doing it because they're afraid of getting sided and middled. That's why they do that. But I'm not a big fan of that. We really only move the juice on 3 and 7 here, and we would really never go higher than -120. Like right now, we got a couple of games. We have 320, but everything else we're dealing at -110. And in college football, we exclusively deal it at -110.
Gotcha. Okay. Really tough to back Tannehill here, but I don't think you can lay a touchdown in 7.5 here with the injured Deshaun Watson and the Texans.
Yeah, I don't really have an opinion on that game. I've sort of made fun of both of those teams this season. I'm surprised they're both 4-3, but I'm going to stay away from that game. The book will certainly need Miami tonight, and there'll be a lot of, like I said earlier, parlays and teasers that are going to start with Houston and be connected to a game this weekend, maybe Pittsburgh, Chicago, maybe the Rams.
Yeah, we know about the home teams versus the road teams on Thursday night. Last week we saw the Broncos. So it's basically been the favorites that have taken care of business, except for the opener. There was a wonky line that went from back and forth between who was favored with the Falcons and Eagles. But it definitely is like the favorites winning. Now, the favorites sometimes don't cover. I think that's been, you know, we saw that a couple times. But for the most part, it's been the favorite taking care of business on the short week.
Favorites winning in the short week island game, never good for the house, Doug. Maybe we'll get one tonight.
Let's go to Sunday. We have another London game early, 9:30 a.m. This time, Philly and Jacksonville kicking things off out in the across the pond.
You know, this is an interesting line. Philadelphia, a 3-point favorite here at the Superbook at the Westgate. This line was pick'em, and when we did our look-ahead number a week ago, and we actually had Jacksonville favored on the game of the year number for a while. I'm surprised this line has come up as much as it did. I know that Jacksonville had a terrible performance on Sunday that we talked about where they lost to Houston. Philadelphia lost too. And they totally blew their game in the second half to the Carolina Panthers. And, Doug, we know how good Blake Bortles is in London.
Yes, yes. London Bortles is Hall of Fame material.
Yeah, he's pretty good out there. So, you know, Jacksonville does have a lot of experience with this trip to London, playing this game there. I think that'll give them some kind of an advantage. They're a tough team to back, too, though. But Philadelphia shouldn't be laying 3 points in this game, in my opinion. I think that line's way too high.
Last week, we did not see one team roll over. The Titans and the Chargers both played a somewhat competitive game. What will we see this week? What trend will it be, that one, or will one of these teams roll over? Because the Jags reportedly could have a little dissension with the quarterback situation within the locker room.
I don't see the Eagles rolling over, not with that coach. And if anybody would roll over, you'd think it would probably be Jacksonville. But I do think the value is on the Jaguars here at +3, -110.
Yeah, getting a solid 3 here. You mentioned the Steelers probably being in a lot of teaser bets, laying 8.5 or 8 across town with the Browns at Heinz Field, a rematch of what was a thriller earlier in the year.
Yeah, and this will be a popular teaser and moneyline parlay play, Doug. Guys will be teasing the Steelers underneath that field goal. Should be a fun game, though. The Browns are involved. Overtime's always on the table. Poor coaching decisions are likely to very likely in this game, and I'll be watching that game at 10 a.m. I always try to position myself in front of the Browns game.
Kansas City, the only team this season that is perfect against the spread, because they had the backdoor cover at Foxborough a couple Sundays ago, so they remain perfect. They are the darlings of NFL bettors, and they're home here laying 10 in a rematch of the – excuse me, not a rematch, but a game – excuse me, a rematch of a Monday night game they almost lost, but had a miraculous comeback with Denver.
Well, of course they're the darlings of the NFL bettors. Their offense is awesome. Patrick Mahomes is unbelievable, and they cover every week. I don't blame the public for getting behind the Chiefs. I've seen most of the money come in on the Chiefs in this spot, too. I think you're going to see some wise guys look to take Denver plus the 10 points, or if it gets even higher than 10. Denver, on that Monday night game you just mentioned, that was a game we saw all of our sharp groups come in on the Broncos, and that line got bet all the way down that Monday night game. And Denver probably should have won that game. They blew that game in the fourth quarter.
What sharp plays have you taken so far?
We had a guy that I respect took the Arizona Cardinals plus one. They're at home against the San Francisco 49ers. Should be a barn burner on Sunday afternoon. That line is pick 'em now. Honestly, there hasn't been that much this week. There really hasn't. There's really not that much. And I do the show with Brent Musburger on Wednesdays. He makes me give him a super contest pick, and he was very mad at me for my pick of the Bears a week ago. So I was very nervous about it, and I was looking around to see what the sharp guys were on. I was texting with Ed Sammons and Jeff Sherman. They basically told me they didn't like anything. And I was like, great, well, that should make this really easy for me.
And I believe, so take me through that interaction. I believe Brent calls you Mr. Director.
He likes, or either that or Lad. He likes to refer to me as Lad. I guess he considers me a young man, which is flattering. But he wasn't happy with the Bears pick, Doug. And I was nervous about the show yesterday, and I got nothing from the guys here. I mean, it's usually a consensus thing. I mean, I'm the scapegoat, obviously, when we lose, but there's usually a consensus. We all huddle and talk about what we like. And the guys here just, they gave me absolutely nothing. It was ridiculous. So I went out there with just no information. It was brutal.
So you're portraying a scenario where they treat you like a pledge.
And, you know, I saw Ed Sammons and his wife Linda at the Golden Knights game last night. We met up between periods, and I just said, thanks for nothing. I mean, you gave me nothing today. And I gave Mr. Musburger a pick, but we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it doesn't do too poorly, but not much help from the Superbook guys this week, I'll tell you that much. And I'm not going to forget about it.
What's your record with Mr. Musburger's picks on the show?
This is week 8, 4-3. 4-3, but I was 4-1. I had the Patriots 2 weeks ago, minus 3.5, that game against the Chiefs that we talked about, and then I had the Bears plus 3 last week. So the 4-1, he loved me then. I can only imagine what nickname he'll have for me in a couple of weeks if we keep giving him losers. Two losers in a row. He's not too happy right now.
Yeah, I'd say he's very upset about it.
Yeah, he is. He is. But we'll see. Hopefully we'll rebound this week. I'll let you guys know what I gave him this week later in the show.
So, yeah, please do. So any other sharp plays?
Not really. I mean, we saw that. I mentioned the Cardinals. I think you're going to like this one, though, Doug. A game that could be setting up to be your favorite, the square dog, is the Green Bay Packers.
Ooh.
We're seeing most of the bets come in on Green Bay so far. A lot of money line bets on Green Bay. Now, don't get me wrong. The Rams are being used in a lot of parlays and teasers, which is what you'd expect with that 9.5 line, and they're the big favorite. But if we're just looking at the straight bets, right now, about 3.5 to 1 are on the Green Bay Packers, and a big percentage of those straight bets on the money line are on the Green Bay Packers. Could be setting up for your favorite game there in the afternoon, the Rams possibly rolling the Green Bay Packers on Sunday.
So it's in L.A. Obviously the Rams look good. Niners team that had kind of left it on the field in Lambeau. So I don't know where I stand here because the Packers are off a bye. But
that,
I'd love
you know, speaking of the Niners, the Cardinals pick does make sense to me from that one sharper player I mentioned. Cardinals, coming off of that loss on Thursday Night Football, they had 3 extra days to prepare. They brought in a new offensive coordinator. They fired Mike McCoy. They brought in Byron Leftwich. It sounds like Patrick Peterson had some meetings with the front office this week. This looks like a spot where Arizona could circle the wagons on Sunday. But, man, they're a tough team to back, Doug.
They are. They're just not good. It's just that simple. And they obviously, I like Josh Rosen, but he's got some growing pains.
Yes, I agree.
All right, any other games you want to break down? I think we're going to have a big bonanza play on the Patriots on Monday night. But how about the big marquee matchup, the rematch of the Minneapolis Miracle, New Orleans and Minnesota?
Well, that's the best game of the week, the Sunday night game. Now, I will say this. When we opened this number, we opened at Minnesota minus 2.5. That was on Sunday night. We did see some sharper players take the Saints, plus 2.5, plus 1.5. Now that line has been knocked down to a pick 'em where it currently is. I think we're going to probably end up needing the Vikings in this game. I think that the public is going to come in on the Saints as well. I won't be surprised to see the Saints go off as a favorite in this game.
I'm excited for this game. It should be a great sports night. Yeah. I actually have some buddies coming over, I think, for the Man Cave, but I'm concerned, will we even have a Game 5 of the World Series?
I think you'll get a Game 5. I mean, I do believe in the Dodgers. The Red Sox are just such a good team. You know, we had one of our sharper baseball bettors actually bet the Dodgers yesterday for Game 2, but that one didn't come through for him, unfortunately.
Look, I was not optimistic coming into the series, but it's kind of frustrating knowing that the Dodgers had chances in both games.
Yeah, they absolutely have, and I think they'll have their chances in L.A. as well. I hope the series goes back to Boston at least, because with these two high-profile franchises, it's really good for handle. So we certainly don't want to see this series end in 4 or 5 games. We want to see 7 games if possible.
It was depressing. I'm just glad I didn't pay for the tickets last night. Just simple as that.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, Murphy, you had the backdoor cover on Monday night.
Yeah.
But, 3 L's outside of that. So a lot of sharp plays.
An ugly week.
But another tough situation.
Yeah, the sharp NFL plays don't seem to do as well as the sharp college football plays, Doug. I wonder why that is.
So
the sharp college football play is good. Sharp NFL plays, not good.
No, well, you know, it happens, right? It happens. And we talked about it earlier with the Bears and the Jets games. And, I mean, you were on the Ravens, which is a tough beat because you should have had a shot at least in overtime. But
yeah, there were a lot of wise guys on the Ravens. There's a lot of money both ways in that game, actually. But some of the sharper players I know around town told me they liked the Ravens in that game. That was a great game, though. Nothing to complain about there. The Ravens scored a late touchdown that would have forced overtime, but I certainly wouldn't act like the Ravens were a bad beat at all. That was just a very well-played game. Could have gone either way. The Saints were able to get the win.
I had 2 Twitter plays that both lost.
I know you had the Falcons, right?
Yeah, I also had the Cowboys at halftime. I wanted to get off my position.
Oh, that's right.
Because we talked about it. They're terrible in the second half. Still did not score an offensive touchdown in the second half. They've only scored 1 all year, and that was in garbage time on Monday night against New Orleans. But they got that defensive touchdown by the strip sack of Dak Prescott in the end zone, and they got there thanks to the missed field goal off the upright. So I'm okay with my hedge. And then I live bet the Falcons minus 3.5 for a nickel flat, and obviously the bad beat there. So, bad beat, but the theatrics at the end there. So that was a tough one there. But I did get lucky with my teaser. I had the Chargers minus 0.5, and obviously we talked about the 2-point conversion attempt by the Titans. So, you know, that's the NFL, right? It's not the NBA anymore. It's the NFL that's flipping the coin down the stretch.
Dan, I've told Ed before, I think that there's no point in us even watching these things until about 12:45 on Sunday. The 10 a.m. kicks is what I'm referring to. There's no point even watching until about that 12:45 mark. That's when things really heat up every Sunday, it seems like.
So by my calculations, I lost 150 last week, and you lost 1250. So you're minus 2200 overall, Murray. You might have to crank it up. Man,
I might have to, and I don't like anything this week, so I'm going to have to I'll save it up. I still can make my move later in the season, hopefully. But my move will not be made this week, I can tell you that much. There's nothing out there for me.
Okay, so why don't I know you've got a meeting to go to, so why don't I'm up on the tee box because I lost less than you did last week.
Thanks for reminding everybody how important I am, as well as how bad my NFL picks have been. I do have a meeting to go to, so I, even though my NFL picks are bad, I still am very important, Doug.
Correct. We've alluded to the Costanza-isms you could use in these meetings. But no commenting on anyone's wives here, okay? None of that.
And I won't be stuffing my face with shrimp either. I'm just going to sit there.
I'm going to start with tonight. I like the under in this game. We talked about Deshaun Watson and Osweiler. First, this is a straight field play, but I'm going to go 300 on the first half under. 22, it looks like you guys are on the high side of the market. So I'm going to go under 22 for 300. I just think when you have two, in this case, shaky quarterback situations, teams tend to play very conservatively. As long as these Miami Dolphins receivers don't take bubble screens and house it, I think I should be okay here.
All right, I like the play, and I'm going to give you a total, too. I'm going to go with the over, Seattle-Detroit, over 49.5. I liked it better at 48.5, but I'll go over 49.5 for 500 in the Seahawks-Lions game on Sunday morning.
Okay, so the Seahawks coming off a bye, right?
Yeah, the Seahawks, they played in London, and then they had their bye week. Now they go to Detroit on Sunday afternoon on the East Coast.
Okay, so that's your first play. Interesting. Okay, so but the Lions, you know, they're red hot. I like that. All right, I definitely looked at some teasers, so I was back on the teaser train a week ago. Tempted by your square dog fade, if you will, I am going to think about laying the wood with Kansas City. I'm going to take a teaser. I'm going to take the big chalk here, Kansas City and the Rams. We do a.
Okay.
What are your on a 6.5 point teaser?
6.5 point two team teaser.
Yeah.
-140.
All right, so I'm going to do Kansas City. Now there it's 3.5, right? If you do 6.5, then I'm going to do the Rams. Are you at 9.5? Okay, so never mind.
Yeah, we have 9.5.
I'm going to do a regular 6 point teaser. Then I apologize. I'm going to do both the Chiefs and the Rams on the teaser. So it'll be Rams -3.5. Do you guys push with teasers? What's your ruling on it?
If one of them, this is a Nevada rule that a lot of people don't know about. If one of them pushes, it's a push, even if the other one loses.
That's incredible to me. So let's do a 6.5 point here. Kansas City 3.5 and the Rams -3.
Okay. For how much?
We'll do 500.
Okay. I only got one more play, and it's going to surprise you. It's not the kind of thing I usually would pick, but it's going to be the Rams -9.5. And I'm going to tell you why. When you're picking poorly, you've got to change things up. If I continue to do the same things every week, like bet these sharper plays, these quote sharp plays, that would be the definition of an insanity, right? To just keep doing the same thing over and over again. So I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to go with the Rams -9.5, the big favorite for $500.
Okay, because you're fading. You're now just going with your gut instead of the sharps.
I'm just going the opposite of what I would normally do, and I'm going to just take the big favorite.
You are pulling a Costanza.
Yeah, that's true. Even before I go to this meeting, I'm pulling. Maybe when I'm up in the boardroom, I'll order a T-bone steak, too.
But that's what George did. He went salmon because they swim upstream.
That's true.
On the side. All right.
So the T-bone involved. Steak.
So my final play is I had some requests on Twitter. I do think it's a good spot. I don't like that they're on the road. I'm going to lay the two touchdowns here with the Patriots. We're going to set up a middle here. we're going to set up a middle. I don't trust the Bills offense at all. Let's go $5,000.
Oh boy. All right.
And then
Patriots minus 14 for 5,500, win 5,000 with the intention to play out of it, I assume.
I think we're not desperate yet. I will be playing out of it and hopefully going for the middle. So I like New England minus 14 for a nickel is 500. It's just five dimes, right? There's no terminology.
Yeah, five dimes. None that I'm aware of. No.
Okay.
But that'll make Monday interesting. If you want to be interested on Sunday, the pick that I gave Mr. Musburger, Seattle plus 3. They're on the road against the Lions. Ed did tell me that he does like that one. After the fact, he told me that. But I'm going to go with the – I went with the Seahawks plus 3 for Brent. I'm not going to use it in the Bonanza. I've been snapped too many times, gone the minus 120s. We have plus 3, minus 120. But coin flip situation here, Doug. I went with the Seahawks here, plus 3. And Jeff said, I hope you hang on to that coin you flipped.
So that game has a lot of implications because you have the over in our bankroll Bonanza.
Yeah. I'm keeping an eye on that one on Sunday morning. And I'm going to keep an eye on the Browns game because the Browns are fun.
Of course. And so what are your amounts on the over and the Rams minus 9?
Both of my plays for the Bonanza. Put me down for $500, please.
Okay. By the way, we've done really well on the large bets. The dimes or over, we've hit them all but one. So we're doing really well with our money management on our records, if you will.
Yeah, later in the year I'll have to ratchet it up and get some dimes and two-dime plays. But I really don't like anything this week, truly. I think this is a really tough card. And it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about the Super Contest, the Superbook Super Contest. It'd be tough to come up with five plays this week, man. It really would.
It really would. All right, get to that meeting. Thanks for the time, man. We'll connect next week with hopefully some positive momentum off a middle on Monday night.
And hopefully Brent isn't still mad at me come next Wednesday.
All right, Mr. Director. Thank you.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Thanks to John Murray, who is off to the meeting. Mike Clay, our fantasy football insider and analyst, is going to join us momentarily. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Hey, gents, every man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. We make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com with the promo code Behind the Bets for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater. And they'll be good any time of year. For any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches, Indochinos at an introductory price of $79.
Talk nerdy to me.
Back with fantasy analyst Mike Clay for some prop betting. Mike, are you kind of conditioned to that drop now with the talk nerdy to me?
I am. I appreciate it. I've been called a nerd my whole life, so it's nothing new, and I enjoy it. You know, I've accepted it, and I soak it all in and just go with it, you know?
Good. I appreciate it.
You got to be who you are, you know?
Yeah, we're not hurting feelings here. That's important.
never.
You do cause enough pain by losing bets here on the Bonanza and other things. But you've been doing well with the props, 2-2 a week ago. You and I were tweeting at each other during the Broncos blowout. You're like thinking it's looking good. I'm like, yeah, well, unless the Cardinals can't get a first down, then Case Keenum might have to throw, or even with a big lead. Fortunately, the Cardinals did show some life to prevent Keenum's prop total from going over.
Yes, it was not even close. That one, you could tell pretty early with that big lead, he wasn't going to get close to 24.5 completion. So that one went as expected. You know, they don't always go that way. We've had that problems before. Obviously, the Giants-Falcons game went a little bit different than expected. We went 1-for-1 in that game. But, yeah, overall, we're up by quite a few. We're well over 500 for the year, so we're hanging in there.
And true to form, Julio Jones. Not down by the pylon, as I like to say on SportsCenter highlights in the back of the day.
Yeah, at this point, you know, the guy could probably get 50 targets in a game and still not get close to the end zone. And that's what we talked about last week, right? Like, he's getting a lot of targets, but they're not using him near the goal line. He did have that one on it was kind of like a double move, sort of like a wheel route, and Ryan completely missed him. But that's been the trend. You know, whenever they actually do throw to him, like they did all last season, it doesn't work out. So that's not part of the offense anymore, and you could feel pretty good about taking the no on Julio touchdowns going forward, it seems like.
And Jason Witten diagrammed a play on the broadcast Monday night explaining it was basically triple teamed, where mm-hmm. he cleared out an area of the field with literal three defenders on him, and that opened it up. So it's really the coverages that are taking him out.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. I mean, when Marvin Hall's catching touchdowns, you know it's a problem. You know something's wrong.
All right, man. Well, let's get into this week. We got anything for tonight?
Yes, I do. I actually like a couple in this game. It's Miami and Houston, of course. And we'll start with the quarterback, Brock Osweiler. You know, I like him over 1.5 passing touchdowns. I think he can get to two. And listen, I don't want to express too much confidence in Brock Osweiler. I think he's going to turn into a pumpkin here pretty quickly. But he's at plus 170, Doug, to hit the over 1.5. You know, Houston has allowed one touchdown each to Dallas, Buffalo, and Jacksonville, but they've allowed two plus passing touchdowns to the Patriots, Titans, Giants, and Colts, you know, so I think Osweiler can deliver here. He has five passing touchdowns in two games. 88% of the Dolphins' touchdowns have been passes so far this season. So, you know, I have him rate out 1.5 touchdowns, so I think he'll be in that 1-2 range. So plus 170, I mean, I think you have to take that. You know, those are great odds there.
I mean, I know he's the quarterback throwing passes, and two touchdowns and through the air is not a lot to ask.
Right.
Plus 170. I am not a fan of Osweiler. I like the under first half tonight, and I think if they've scored, it's really been on bubble screens that those guys take to the house, which obviously counts in this prop bet, but I personally just don't have a lot of faith in him.
Yeah, and I totally get that. I've been kind of banging the table for Albert Wilson to be a regression to the mean candidate, and it was pretty much a lock. Of course, he got injured, but they're going to slot Jakeem Grant right into that role. So obviously, he could take one a long way. Devontae Parker's in. I still think he's kind of underrated, even though he's been an underachiever. He'll play a bigger role this week as well. So I think it's just the math here. If this was plus 110, plus 120, or even, you know, I'm staying away, but at plus 170, I think it's well worth a shot.
And your projections have him at 1.5, so it makes sense. What else do you have?
I like Danny Amendola in this one. The over-under on his receiving yards is 50.5 at minus 110. I'm going to take the over here. He reached 51 receiving yards only twice this season, but they're his past two games. You know, he started kind of slow that first month with the team, but he didn't clear six targets during any of those five games. His last two games, Doug, he has 18 targets total, and he's hit 59 and 84 yards. Aaron Colvin is not going to play. He's the slot corner for Houston, so that's an upgrade for Amendola, who's the slot man for Miami. And don't forget, Albert Wilson, as mentioned, is out. Kenny Stills is also out, so it's going to be Amendola, Jakeem Grant, and Devontae Parker. They don't really like throwing to the tight end too much. Kenny and Drake will obviously be a big factor in the passing game as well, but Amendola is set up very well for a lot of targets. It's a road game. I think they're going to have to throw the football plenty. I think he clears 50.5, and he might easily do it.
Interesting. I like all the trends there and all the analysis. What's next?
Let's go to the Saints and the Vikings here.
Oh,
obviously, this is gonna be fun. Obviously, a rematch of that playoff game from last year that had the long Stephon Diggs touchdown, and I think we might see plenty of touchdowns in this one as well. In fact, I like Alvin Kamara to score a touchdown in this game. The prop is plus 120, yes, or minus 140 for no. So I'm gonna go. Yes, here he has 20 touchdowns in 22 career games, and again, this we know the Saints' offense is outstanding. You know, at any given point, they could score four, maybe five touchdowns. I know Mark Ingram is a larger factor than he was in the first month, but he was a huge factor last season. He had about 100 more carries than Kamara, and again, he still was on that torrid touchdown pace. So, Yeah, it's a little riskier than it was in the first month, but Kamara is such a big part of that offense, and they are going to use him in a big way, I think, in a game they want to win. This is big. This is big playoff implications. It could mean home field come playoff time. So I like Kamara here.
Real quick.
Yeah.
And that is to score a touchdown or score in general? Because I know the Saints go for two.
Oh, no, score a touchdown. That is for a touchdown, yes.
And then second is, what are your stats and projections and spreadsheets tell you about this Vikings defense? I've talked about it on the Will Cain show in a gambling segment. It's almost like a brand name, and it's not that stout as Vikings defenses in the past. What do your stats say?
Well, still allowing just over two touchdowns a game. So they've been, you know, they've had the bad game against the Rams, obviously, which you can kind of excuse them for. They gave up three to the Bills, and that kind of, it almost is a game you want to throw away, right? They fell behind early, and then they panicked and stopped running. They just threw it like 92% of the time in that game. But otherwise, they haven't allowed more than two touchdowns in a game. The 49ers, when they played Aaron Rodgers, he settled for a lot of field goals, only threw the one touchdown. Arizona scored one. Jets scored two. And this game is, yeah, it is at home. You know, I still believe in them. They're going to get Everson Griffen back as well. There's just too much talent for them to be a bad defense. I think they'll be above average, maybe even a top five defense going forward. But again, you're playing against one of the best offenses in the NFL that is red hot, loaded with weapons as well. So I could easily see the Saints pushing for 30 points in this one.
Gotcha. Good. Sorry to interrupt you. You can continue for the Sunday night game.
Yeah, I mean, I just have one more from that game. I mean, on the Viking side of the ball, I think Kirk Cousins over two is worth a look. I mean, it's risky to expect three touchdowns for sure, but you look a little closer at this Vikings offense, and you see that they are one of the pass-heaviest offenses in the NFL. And on top of that, 78% of their offensive scores have been passes. They have two-plus passing touchdowns four of their past seven games. And yes, they've been more balanced with their play calling the past couple of weeks, but they were wins. They were comfortable wins. They haven't had to throw the football. So they built this offense around throwing it with Kirk Cousins. You still don't have Dalvin Cook back. I think they come out chucking it against the Saints, trying to take advantage of a team that's allowed a ton of production through the air so far. So over two is plus 110, under two is minus 130. So again, this one's a little riskier, but I do like taking the chance at plus 110 here for Cousins.
Yeah, you're basically saying it's more likely that he gets three touchdown passes than zero or one, because two's a push.
Yes, precisely. So definitely like that one based on how they've operated that offense with him under center this year.
And Dalvin Cook's out.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so, I mean, I think a lot of signs point to that. He could have two very easily by halftime.
No question. Again, I think it's a little misleading with the four rushing touchdowns the past 2 weeks. A lot of that was, you know, some of that's variance. You know, it's just, you could call a pass on first down at the goal line. It doesn't hit. You know, it could be, it just slips through a guy's hands, and then you run it in on the next play. That tends to happen in the NFL, but they are definitely a very pass-oriented offense. And, you know, people are probably down on him a little bit based on the last 3 weeks, but he's really playing extremely good football. He has Diggs and obviously Adam Thielen in the slot's been ridiculously good. He has a great matchup against PJ Williams. So a lot to love here.
No doubt. But as for as much as a high profile matchup we have on Sunday night with a lot of those marquee players and skill positions, Monday night, not so much. I always get a kick out of when you get a situation like the Bills and their quarterback situation. Sometimes you just have to do like total passes by Buffalo, because you don't know if Anderson's going to play the whole game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little bit of a concern here, though. The theme I'm going to get into, I actually have three props from this game that I like. The theme is going to be the Bills are an NFL franchise. The same case I made before they went to Minnesota, you know, taking the opposing team minus like 14, 15, 16 points is just, it's a bold strategy in today's NFL. And I think, with Derek Anderson in there, they can at least keep this close, in Buffalo. The game's in Buffalo, and because they have a good defense, the Bills defense is pretty good. And I think, you know, the first prop I like here is Julian Edelman under 57.5 receiving yards at minus 110. He's seen 24 targets in three games, and his yardage totals are 57, 54, and 36. So he hasn't even hit this number yet. And again, he's going against Bills defense, allowing 6.7 yards per attempt. Tre'Davious White's not going to be on Edelman a ton. He'll be on Josh Gordon. I think he shadows him. But Taron Johnson's done a nice job in the slot. And overall, the Bills have two good safeties. They have Jerry Hughes, Tremaine Edmonds, you know, Lorenzo Alexander. They have a lot of quality pieces on that unit. So I think they could maybe keep this one a little closer than people think. So I like Edelman on the under.
Well, even if the Patriots win on a one-sided game, that helps the under, right?
Yeah, oh, certainly for the passing game. And that kind of leads right to the next one, right? Because Derek Anderson, I have over 18.5 completions at minus 110. So the idea there being that it's not a blowout, but New England is up in the game and Derek Anderson is forced to throw the football. Now, you might think, well, this is a very run-oriented offense there. They want to put it in Shady McCoy's hands. If he even plays in this game, we don't know. But, you know, if you're behind, you have to throw the football. And Anderson is not going to scramble, whereas the Bills earlier this season had a ton of rushing attempts because Josh Allen scrambled or he had designed runs and they wanted to run the football. They were competitive in games. In this case, you know, just look at last week. Anderson had 20 pass completions in that game. So I have him at 22. I think this one's a pretty large gap. You do worry a little bit about him being terrible and being benched at halftime, but could they really go back to Nate Peterman? I mean, come on. You can't go back to Nate Peterman. You know, all due respect to that dude, he's just playing horrible football. Anderson is clearly going to give you something better on the field.
Hey, look, I get what you're saying. Like, it makes a lot of sense because Peterman and the report by Diana Rossini about the locker room, mm-hmm. and to keep that intact, and I like the Bills coach, actually, but, I mean, Derek Anderson stinks.
Well, I mean, he's barely played the last how many years, so they're desperate.
Where
they're
he
desperate.
Is in his life, I think. That's the thing.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
He did have 31 pass attempts. He did have 31 pass attempts in the last game.
Mm-hmm.
And only 20 completions, but that's over 18.5. Solid 3 interception effort.
Yeah, I mean, he completed 23 if you count those. I mean, there is that. Yeah, I think it's just, potentially garbage time as well. You have to factor that in. I could be wrong, and it is a blowout, and that just means Anderson's going to be throwing it plenty. So, this one, a lot of variables, a lot of the unknown with Anderson having made one start in quite some time, but... You know, again, he did go short, and he completed quite a few passes. They're 20 of 31. I mean, that's not too bad.
That's a win. That's yeah. over 18.5 if he repeats it.
You got it. Yep.
All right. Do you have another one? I believe you said you had 3.
Yeah, I have one more. Again, this has to do with respecting the fact that this is an NFL franchise over 14.5 points. I think we go that direction. Again, remember, this was laughable to suggest they could hit that mark in Minnesota. You know, people were like, how can you have them at 13, 14 points? In that game, and they put up 24 and won that game. So I think that's a very low number for any team. Again, you have a couple scenarios here. If the game is closer than expected, it could be like a 27-10 or 27-13 game. It's very possible that happens. But you also have the possibility of New England putting up a lot of points, and the Bills have to try and play catch up and are throwing a lot so they could clear 14.5, even if it's with a late touchdown. But again, I just the way I project games out, which is relatively conservative, a lot like Vegas. I usually come in pretty close to Vegas within a 4 or 5 points at the most. I have them at 18, and that's a low number. That's a low projection for any NFL team. So I think the over is the safer play here at minus 110.
All right, man. Well, good stuff. Look, the prop bets are always fun. It's a game within the game. Some people like to mm-hmm. get involved there with small plays, but good analysis. You've been strong all year. Appreciate all the hard work you do with the nerding out of the spreadsheet on the computer. And
yep, it's always been fun. And again, these are the projections that power the fantasy game. There's a page that has all these player projections for every single player in the league. So they're always updated through Sunday and Monday.
So go check that out. Mike's also a regular on the Fantasy Podcast as well. And what's the official title of the podcast?
Yeah, the Fantasy Focus Podcast, Fantasy Focus NFL. You know, there's a few, the 06010 NFL, we call it right. Many different things. So, yep, we will we on that today and on that Friday as well, but that's always lots of fun as well.
Okay, so Thursdays and Fridays, and then also Sunday's football fantasy football show as well.
Well, I'm usually on the Fantasy Focus Tuesday, but I'm filling in for Matthew Berry. He's at this place called Disney World this week, so lucky him, having a good old time this weekend. So I'm filling in for him Thursday and Friday.
Yep, saw that as well, and then you'll be on Sunday as well. So,
yes. Yeah.
All right, bud, thanks again for all the contributions.
All right, anytime. Good luck this weekend.
Talk nerdy to me.
All right, that's going to wrap up the podcast. Kai, we go to the bullpen. Any confessions of a non-gambler?
Yeah, I did jot down one thing. I want to know if we could just get a explanation on what exactly is a square dog.
Ooh, good question. All right, so we talk about sharps and the public, right? Sharps are, quote-unquote, it's a nickname for a professional bettor. So just the, you know, sharp players. It's a complimentary term, sharp. And then the negative to that, the counter, the opposite is square. So square means you're a public bettor. You make a lot of mistakes. It's more the masses. And there's some pitfalls of square bettors, like only remembering what you last saw, things like that. And usually the squares, the public, likes to bet on a good team, a quote-unquote good team. So it's usually the team that is favored. So 9 times out of 10, or even maybe 39 times out of 40, the public will always bet on the favorite and lay the points, like the Falcons on Monday night, like the Chiefs on Sunday night. The popular play, when you're a sports book, you will likely all the time have more tickets and more bets on the favorite than you will the underdog. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, I'm following.
Right. So, and then, but that's, if you bet the underdog, usually the sharps bet the underdog. There's two ways to win. There is losing by less than the point spread or winning the game outright. Whereas the favorite not only has to win the game, but they have to win by a certain margin.
Right.
So
right.
What John was saying is occasionally we see a scenario where the public is actually backing an underdog. That is the square dog.
Ah, got you. Okay. Because the public is a square. Got you.
And usually those are dead losers. So if the public is all on the underdog, and then it's something called a reverse line movement. We talked about it with Michigan a couple of weeks ago on the college podcast, and it moves in the opposite direction. So even though there's more money coming in on the underdog, they keep moving the line up. It's because the respected money is on the favorite. So what Murray was suggesting is shaping up to be, it's not quite there yet, but the way the tickets are trending is that the public will actually be on an underdog with the Packers. And historically, when it's that overwhelming and that split on an underdog favorite, that means the favorite will roll. Like, the number's high for a reason, even though the public likes the dog. So it's usually just kind of a trend, but it's sort of a nuanced trend.
I got it. Just like yesterday, it's really in the name. Just like futures, it's in the name, square dog. I like that, yeah. Though. I'm going to run with that one.
Yeah, there's terms.
I like calling
like
people squares anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's a term that, like, a dog with fleas, you know, it's like.
All right. Let's put one foot in front of the other. Let's not get to the dog with fleas yet.
Okay. Let's crawl before we walk. All right. Any other confessions?
No more confessions, but I do want to give a shout out, if I can, to @MarvB_, who's a loyal listener and said that Doug and Murray are going to have to pay for your son's undergrad and graduate programs at this rate on the Bonanza. I'm not sure that's exactly how the Bonanza works, but I'll take it.
You'll take the tuition in grad school.
Hey man, you can't turn anything down but your collar.
I'm above $10,000 imaginary dollars. I've been doing okay. I've just been taking a hit a couple of weeks. So you're right. At that rate, I'd be broke. We'll see. It's a big position I'm taking with the Patriots -14 for five dimes. I'll obviously play out of that.
Oh, it's gonna make it so interesting.
I just need to make sure that the Patriots don't, you know, only lead by 3 or 7 all first half, and I need them to get up, you know, 10-0, 14-0, and then I could play out of it. But I have that kind of faith in Derek Anderson. Mike Clay says over 18.5 completions. I don't know if I see it. I do think the Patriots' defense is shaky, but this was not a good look for the Bills last week. I'm going to keep fading yeah. Derek Anderson. I think these quarterbacks are coming to life, or, you know, we're getting the true sense of them and Osweiler as well. So we'll see what happens in those games, but a lot of fun. Nonetheless, thanks to John Murray, thanks to Mike Clay, thanks to everyone for listening and their loyalty throughout the season. It's always fun, and downloading, rating, and listening. Is that right, Kai? Subscribing. I always forget the subscribe part. So subscribe, download, rate, and review.
Correct. You got it.
I got it. All right, man. Kai, Giants, you just punt. They're punting on the season. You should.
Hey, man. You know, let's just tank the rest of the season. See if we can get it right next time in the draft. Nothing against Saquon, though.
Yeah, no, he's dynamic to watch. He's very enjoyable. It's a quarterback thing. Look, I'm a Raiders fan. I have one win as well. So we're combined 2-11 here, so we're doing okay. We're surviving. All right, bud, have a good weekend, and thanks to all of our listeners, and best of luck out there.
You too. Go Dodgers.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.